DW Africa Link.
We need to create a lot of awareness, especially at the grassroots level, on matters technologically facilitated gender-based violence. Create more support systems for victims, survivors, and those who are at risk. And also create visibility on the issue.
I advocate for young mothers and also empower them and reach out to how I can help them. We face a lot. We face gender-based violence. We face also malnutrition. We lose hope. We go suicidal. We don't know how to reach out.
Violence against women demands urgent action. And it's not just violence, but a specific surge in femicide, which is the intentional killing of women because they are women. I mean, think about that for a second. According to the United Nations, on average, one woman is killed every day in Kenya due to femicide or gender-based violence. Experts say violence is being normalized in society and victims are being silenced. As we mark International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, what's the best way to tackle violence against women? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Kenya saw a sharp rise in killings of women in 2024. At least 170 women were killed due to femicide. It's the highest number ever recorded, with a 79% increase over the previous year. The government has described gender-based violence, GBV, as one of the country's most urgent security threats and created a specialized police unit to tackle it. A necessary step because the trauma and loss, physical, psychological, and economic, affect not only survivors, but entire families and communities. For more on this, let's bring in Louise Atieno, a feminist and activist, works with a local NGO that deals with young people in matters of sexual and gender-based violence. I also have DW correspondent Thelma Mwadzaya in Nairobi, Kenya. Hello, ladies. Welcome to Africa Link. Thelma, you've been speaking to survivors or families affected by femicide or gender-based violence. What are they telling you? Share some of the stories with us.
I spoke to a girl, and she's now about 24. She was first, attacked when she was about 16. And it was done by someone who actually knows her, someone who's familiar to her. So what happened is the fact that she knew this person. So she felt betrayed. She felt wronged, but didn't know how to say no because this person was familiar to her. So it's something that she wasn't able to talk about because she found it hard for people to believe her family members and immediate family or people who are close to her to believe what she was going to say because they know this person and they know her and they are all familiar with this person. So it was hard for her to speak it out. So she stayed with it inside and she never got any counseling. She never got any treatment. She was lucky that this person did not have any sexual disease that could transmit to her. So she wasn't infected by anything. And she also did not get pregnant from the encounter, which was, can I say, luck on her part. But that doesn't negate the fact that she was violated and she was betrayed and she didn't know who to talk to, who to open up to, because the person was familiar to her. So she stayed with it for all that time, until she was much older, after 20. That's when she could speak about it.
Right. Can you highlight how widespread gender-based violence is?
So gender-based violence happens quite a lot. And that's because most of the times it happens within circles where the person, the victim is familiar with the person. And according to studies done by UNFPA, nearly 90% of young adults who are in schools and, of course, at home have experienced that kind of violence personally. And about half of the of those young ladies have had the physical violence happening to them. And about 64% of women have reported having experienced at least one type of violence. And it's more women than men. That's what the statistics say so far.
Right. And behind the statistics are human lives, especially women that are facing this brutality, not just gender-based violence, also femicide, that women are being killed just for being women. Walk me through a situation that a woman walks into a typical police station to report a threat like gender-based violence. What is the setup like? Is she getting a private room and a trained officer? How does it work out?
Yeah, that's where the problems begin. The police stations are not built in a way to accommodate a situation where, for example, a woman or even a man once is able to speak about something as private and intimate like gender-based violence. Yes, there are gender desks that have been set up in several police stations across the country, especially in the bigger cities. But the problem, the challenge is you may not find a police officer who is, can I say, properly trained to handle such a case, to be for you to be able to actually narrate it. And for the person you're narrating it to, the officer you're narrating it to understand the brevity of the matter and be able to take action without making the victim feel like they're being tortured afresh because they're narrating the ordeal afresh. And the surroundings do not allow for that kind of privacy for someone to talk about it. So that's where the problems begin. So it will be treated like any other offense, any other crime that has happened in the area to be recorded in the occurrence book. It would be treated in a similar manner. But the challenge is the lack of privacy. That's where the problems begin. So yes, they will explain themselves, but they would feel like, I'm not being heard in a manner that makes me feel that they're taking me seriously and actually believing that whatever happened is not my fault and it was a crime and I feel violated. That's the challenge.
One of the many challenges being faced. And I'm going to come to you with this, Louis. I mean, what does this say about how gender-based violence and femicide is being treated?
The situation on the ground is typically that we have barriers, we have system barriers from the community level up to the policy level, because as she was explaining the matter of you as a young person or as a female going to the police station just to report this matter. Number one, there is no privacy. You are just treated like any other case that is brought forward. So the narration bit of it, number one, it lacks confidentiality. Also, the protection of these survivors, it's not assured, because after you're done probably reporting your case at the police station, you still go back home. And if the perpetrator is someone you know, is someone you're living with, how does that look like? You see, you're still going back to the same environment, the same place that is causing harm to yourself. So we lack measures, we lack systems, we lack the accountability from all stakeholders, from the grassroots level up to the policy level, because it's as simple as just, you know, safeguarding the survivor when it comes to matters GBV, of accessibility and availability of shelters that support survivors of gender-based violence. They are inadequate, and some of them lack the support in terms of the operational support. So the realities on the ground are are crazy, for lack of a better word, in terms of just safeguarding the issues with regards to gender-based violence.
Right. Thank you for that. It seems the Kenyan government is trying to do something about it, right? The government recently formed a presidential task force and a missing persons unit to address femicide, for example. Is that not a good step in the right direction? And is that helping at all?
Yes, yes. The task force is helping. But the problem is not that we don't have the structures. We do have the structures. But what are some of the realities on the ground? How effective are they on the ground? It depends, because we have the suburb areas, the leafy suburb areas, and also these informal settlements. So how does these structures reach or cascade down to this a local citizen?
Well, that is noted. So you believe even more can be done, but also survivor-centered justice reforms, such as specialized courts for sexual and gender-based violence, and you can always correct me if I'm wrong, they've been established in Kenya to improve prosecution and support for victims. How is that going? And is that one of the ways forward to tackling this?
Yeah. The court is established and is operational. But what we lack is as simple as a matter of creating awareness, you know, because we still have lots of cases which go unreported, and yet they still happen at the community level. So the awareness that this, when this happens, it's wrong. You know, how does that look like to our local citizen at the community level? Because we have unreported cases, not just gender-based violence, but also sexual violence. You know, a case such as defilement can be handled at the community level without going to the police. So the awareness bit is what we need to strengthen. And with that regard, it will reduce issues around stigma, you know, when it comes to dealing with survivors. And also the reforms are there, grounded in lived realities, but we need to turn this global conversation into local action, just making sure that we ensure that our policies are just not on paper, but they're also in practice at the ground level.
Right, which is very important. The ground level, from the grassroots level, tackling the issue. I realize that you're pointing a lot of fingers at the role of communities and societies. How have they contributed in the surge of gender-based violence cases? And what role could communities and local leaders play in dealing with the issue?
First and foremost, we just need to acknowledge the fact that we are driven by our cultural attitudes, and that makes it harder for women to probably have conversation around gender-based violence, or lead or take up these bold and respectful spaces when it comes to matters gender-based violence, because definitely they are seen as either too bold or disrespectful. So we have to challenge these norms in a way that it creates a platform for visibility, for solidarity, and also education. The lack of awareness speaks also into making sure that everyone is aware, either the children or the elderly in the community level, they understand what it means when you talk about gender-based violence, because the forms and the manifestation of gender-based violence looks different to every individual. So how can we cascade our efforts and our advocacy efforts just to speak to this cohort, to this grassroots individual, or just the community members, you know? And I agree we've made some progress with regards to tackling the matter of gender-based violence, but there is yet to be done, because we are dealing with deep-rooted cultural attitudes that either our parents or even some of us are still exercising. And we need to shift. We need just to shift the narrative, you know, and simplify and just cascade this information to suit an individual that is experiencing the matter. You know, how can we offer trauma-sensitive or psychosocial support, individual psychosocial plans to these survivors, you know, such things.
Right. Thank you very much, Louis. Thelma, let me come back to you. Can you tell me more about how local communities are responding to these challenges, bearing in mind, of course, the cultural norms that in most cases, it seems gender-based violence is being normalized?
The communities, what most are doing is empowering the young people, like, for instance, young girls, to teach them that there are places you can't be after some hours, and you need to carry yourself in a different manner, although that shouldn't matter. But in this case, unfortunately, it does matter. So the younger people are being taught, you need to be more vigilant. You need to not allow people to touch you in a way that is not appropriate. And that's happening in terms of don't let, even in the schools, even in the young children, don't allow people to touch you in a way that makes you uncomfortable, so that the young people themselves, the vulnerable ones, are empowered by saying, no, don't touch me, right from the beginning. Although we know that most of the perpetrators are older and can overpower the younger person or the smaller person, but that's a step. And then there's also community organizations, community-based organizations where they, can I say, spread the word and teach awareness even to parents to be vigilant to their children or any vulnerable people. For instance, people with disability could be targeted as well if they are left on their own. So everyone to be vigilant, to notice that this is not normal. Something is happening here that shouldn't be happening, because at least that gives power to the people in the society. That's what I see.
Right. And we keep saying more needs to be done. And indeed, more needs to be done. But is there the appetite and the will and the infrastructure for more to be done, Thelma?
Yes, there is a will. So far, we have 12 courts that deal specifically with the sexual gender-based violence cases. The cases also, according to statistics, the cases have decreased the number of people who are the cases of the sexual and gender-based violence. They've decreased from 31,000 to much less, down from 32,909 in the previous year. So the improvement is small, but it's something. At least there's a court that can listen to these cases. So that means the privacy bit comes in. That means the dignity is restored. That means the confidence to talk about it is there. And the belief that the justice system will actually do you good is starting to, can I say, being ingrained in the community. So people know that if I feel violated, I can get a solution. Because if you go to court, there is a specific court to listen to that. And that means I will get justice. So the will is there from the government. It's there. And also the cooperation from the community. It is also there, because at least that means people are coming out to report that the violation has happened.
Right. I mean, I like the positive attitude you're giving to it, Thelma. And if there's a genuine sense that things are moving the right way, that is positive. There's another angle I really have to cover, being the moderator of this and the only man in this room, is that there's a constant talk that all men are potential abusers. Now, obviously, I understand the thinking behind that, especially considering that many women and girls are constantly abused. Is that the right way to think this? Or should we be thinking that men can also contribute to ending gender-based violence and femicide?
Yeah. We really need to shift the narrative and the blamings of just making it known that men are the potential perpetrators when it comes to gender-based violence issues. And I love the fact that right now in Kenya, we are so driven on matters engaging boys and men. And we just launched a policy like 2 years ago. So we really need to bring boys and men on board when it comes to this issue, because they can protect if they're informed, if they have the knowledge on whatever they are doing, because it's a matter of choice. It's a matter of just deciding. If you're angry, how do you manage anger? It does not mean it needs to result to violence, you know, but they are left out. Women are empowered. We are empowered. We are, when you look at, when you compare a modern girl or young person to a modern boy, there's a total difference in terms of matters engagement. What are some of the activities we're engaging boys and men? What are some of the activities we're engaging girls? So we need to really bring them on board. We really need them to take up these spaces and be our allies to with matters prevention of gender-based violence and also mitigation. So I agree with you. We need to shift the narrative. We need to bring boys and men on board and just have a co-creation with regards to some of the structures, some of the measures that will speak to us as a community at the end of the day.
Thank you very much, Luis. I have been very educated and informed about this, and it gives me even more sense of responsibility to do more. And I believe all the men, boys listening to this podcast feel the same. It's all hands on deck. It's your sister. It's your mother. It's a lady friend of yours. And so we all definitely have to contribute to ending this madness. Thank you very much for all the contributions. Luis Atieno, feminist and activist. Thank you very much. Also, DW correspondent Thelma Mwazaya in Nairobi, Kenya. Thank you. A lot more effort is needed to tackle gender-based violence and femicide because human lives are at risk here. In Kenya, people are speaking out.
Miriam Beatrice Wanjiru. TFGBV, you know, a very important issue. So in a number of ways, different laws missing in most countries they call recognized. Meta, Facebook, responsibility for develop tools, safety by design in thinking. In as much as government regulate, threats online translate to physical harm. Doxing, release information for your WhatsApp number, home address.
My name is Victor Mundi. I'm a coach. There's a lot of stigma around it, which has made it not visible. We need a lot of awareness on the laws. We need to create a lot of awareness, especially at the grassroots level, on matters technologically facilitated gender-based violence. Create more support systems for victims, survivors, and those who are at risk. And also create visibility on the issue. I would encourage the government to partner a lot with the local institutions in terms of the capacity to reach out to the young people and to educate the community. For survivors, to enable them to come out and give them platforms where they can restart and reintegrate themselves into the society.
I advocate for young mothers and also empower them and reach out to how I can help them. We face a lot. We face gender-based violence. We face also malnutrition. We lose hope. We go suicidal. We don't know how to reach out.
We call on technology companies to strengthen and simplify reporting mechanisms. Of course, they have reporting mechanisms that are a bit cumbersome, too long. So if they simplify this reporting mechanism, we believe that more cases will be reported and we'll see who exactly are the perpetrators behind all these technology-facilitated gender-based violence.
Digital campaigns are one of our innovative strategies to accelerate sensitization against gender-based violence, including femicide. Gender-based violence, including femicide, is a heinous act that must be condemned and appropriate actions implemented against the perpetrators.
It's not just a Kenya problem, of course. Across Africa, there are still significant social tolerance for GBV, where some people believe wife-beating is justifiable in certain circumstances. Absolute nonsense, if you ask me. The bright spot is that there are growing calls for better law enforcement, stronger legal frameworks, increased funding for women's safety programs, and the elimination of discriminatory laws. This isn't a hopeless story. Kenya can learn from South Africa's approach of treating femicide as a national crisis, backed by dedicated data collection, a clear national action plan, and sustained pressure from both government and civil society to turn policy into enforcement. What do you think? We'd love to hear from you, so please share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe, and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for minds.